1, 2, keyboards down. 3, 4.
This is the worst.
We are 35-year-old rock superstar Bruce Springsteen was married by candlelight early this morning. His bride, 25-year-old television actress Julianne Phillips. The wedding party gathered with family and friends at midnight for the quiet private ceremony at a Catholic church in the suburbs of Portland, Oregon.
They wanted a church wedding along with all the goodies. She had a beautiful wedding gown, and Bruce had his tux on, and we had the family there and immediate friends. They wanted it quiet.
Springsteen and Phillips were originally planning to get married on Wednesday, but he was so afraid it was going to turn into a media circus, they moved up the date.
You're listening to Rock and or Roll, and actually you're sort of listening right now to a massive crossover episode, because I was thinking this is a crossover between Rock and or Roll and Tramps Like Us, but it's also a crossover between Getting Bossy and Worst Of. So it's like a crossover within the Rock and or Roll universe.
Yeah, three-way crossover.
Yeah, I could call this Getting Bossy or Worst Of or both. I don't know. I'm not sure how I'll tag it, but
Worst of Bossy?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm joined by, of course, Brian Sword, my co-host for the Worst Of and Getting Bossy series.
Hello,
Brian. And we're also joined by Mr. Lee McCormick, the host of the Tramps Like Us podcast, the Bruce Springsteen podcast. Hello, Lee. Yeah.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me back.
And all three of us just met face-to-face a little more than a week ago at the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. So
lots of fun.
Yeah,
yeah, it was amazing.
It was
amazing.
A great time. I'm sure people who listen to all these podcasts are probably getting pretty sick of hearing about it at this point. I just fast forwarded through the Kiss room so I could hear myself say shit live on the radio when I was talking to Matt Borden.
One of the good things that comes out of the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo is all these collaborations, right? So
yeah.
this is one of the results of the show, all three of us getting together to put together.
Yeah, we were supposed to try to record this at the expo, but it just didn't happen, unfortunately. One thing I learned from the expo is apparently I have the voice of a short person because everybody's remarking on how tall I am, and they almost have thought I was short by hearing my voice. And I'm not that tall. I'm not like John Lamoureux tall. Yeah. I'm 6 feet, maybe 6'1". That's about it. So, but yeah, I've heard that on several podcasts now about how tall I am. So.
Well, it's just amazing when you hear someone's voice on the radio or on a podcast. You just kind of mentally have
an image in your head of what
that voice looks like. And then you see the person, and it's never what you expect, right?
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Yeah, there was a lot of that the first time everybody met each other, like the night before the expo, where people were just kind of like shaking their heads a little bit because maybe who they were meeting wasn't exactly what they pictured, you know?
Oh, man, I remember when Saturday morning when Craig Smith and Eric Miller walked into the building. That was surreal because I've seen a lot of pictures of those guys and I've talked to those guys a lot, and yeah, just being face to face with them, it was I guess it really was the same dynamic as when you see a celebrity in person, you know, but just our version of a celebrity or just somebody you're so familiar with, and now here they are in front of you.
Yeah, all over North America too, which is really cool.
It was so much fun, but here we are back on Skype, ready to shit all over some Bruce Springsteen songs from the 80s. I hope Lee can handle this.
this is tough, man. Like, you guys are handicapping me here. Like, we're only picking the worst songs of the 80s. And, you know, those four records he put out in the 80s are, like, in my top five Bruce records. Like,
yes.
So it was a struggle for me to come up with five, I got to tell you. So I think I'm probably mostly going to be disputing your picks and saying how much I really like this song, even though I'm picking it for worst.
Well, I like the majority of Springsteen songs from the 80s, but, you know, there's some unfortunate missteps perhaps.
We'll see.
Well, so Bruce Springsteen in the 80s, I was thinking, well, because I was thinking what you have is, with Darkness in the River, it seems like you had a brain dump. You know that term? Like, he wrote and recorded, I mean, this isn't even exaggerating, what, hundreds of songs at that time?
Yeah. So, hundreds of songs in like a 2-3 year period.
Yeah.
Like 70 to 81. Or
right.
Whatever, you know?
It was insane. And yeah, so that, you know, The Ties That Bind turns into a double album. And despite all of his obsessing over Born to Run and Darkness being these cohesive thematic albums, The River, you know, feels far less calculated than that.
But that's the genius of it. That's what he wanted. He wanted a variety of things on there. He wanted a representation of the live show, you know, like some deep stuff, some ballads, some party rock, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but it's a weird mix. It has some very serious moments, but then it just has, like, you know, party rock. And but it really seems like with The River, the band weren't taking themselves quite so seriously at that point as Born to Run and Darkness.
And that's probably a good thing. Like, if they had to put out like a third heavy-duty serious album in a row, it might have been, you know, too much for Bruce. Like, if he had put Nebraska out, then it might have been too much all at once. You know, too much too soon.
Yeah,
need a little levity in there, a little Sherry Darling, a little I'm a Rocker.
Right. Yeah. And me and Brian already did our episode where we talked about if he had released The Ties That Bind and then put out another album. And The Ties That Bind, I think, would have been a very strong album if he had released it.
For sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
But, and the, you know, we've talked enough about the album cover of The River on various podcasts. But yeah, he's got his big hit single with Hungry Heart and a massive tour, I think, right? Just a long, crazy tour, and he really becomes a star. At that point,
going to Europe. He hadn't been to Europe since like the Born to Run tour, so he's back in Europe. And
right, and so he's finally got his long sought, you know, success. And then, of course, what does he do next? A bleak acoustic album recorded on a 4-track.
Right.
And but what's difficult to comprehend is that a lot of what becomes Born in the USA comes out of the same batch of songs as Nebraska. So. Right. It was almost like Nebraska was a detour on the road to Born in the USA. Really, that's what it is. Like, he was working towards Born in the USA already when he decides to release Nebraska, which, you know, I'm sure all three of us love Nebraska. It's really great. But also, to follow up his first successful record with that was pretty self-destructive, at least on the surface.
Totally, yeah. Well, he's always been known for making, like, drastic left turns, right? Yeah. Like, after Born in the USA, he goes into Tunnel of Love.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, after, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And after that, he breaks the whole band up, and he goes to L.A., and he's, you know, he's always trying to be unpredictable, I think. Predictable to himself as well.
Definitely doesn't want to do the same album 2 times in a row, that's for sure.
that's for sure. Unless it's Human Touch, Lucky Town. Well, I guess there's a slightly different...
Even then, what he follows up with after that, too. He goes, you know, right back to the folk music. So.
Right, yeah. But, of course, Born in the USA, like, rivals Thriller for just ludicrous success. Just, like, not success no one could have ever even imagined. And also, suddenly, Springsteen has morphed into, like, this beefed-up caricature of himself.
Rambo,
whatever the fuck image he was cultivating for a little while there. It's just, the 80s were just fucking weird, man. They were just fucking weird. And, you know, Springsteen in the 80s, Born in the USA era, is pretty fucking weird to look back on it. Just whatever the hell he was up to with the bodybuilding and the bandanas and the, I don't know.
Well, it sold me. It sold me as a 10-year-old kid. Like, like I said before, like, I loved Rocky and Rambo. And when I saw that Born in the USA video and he came out with his leather jacket and his headband and he looked like Rambo and his, you know, arms were like muscular now and stuff. And
I loved Rambo too as a kid, yeah.
And it was in like the 80s, right? So you had a lot of the, you know, a lot of Flash, Michael Jackson, Prince, Madonna, a lot of the, you know, flashy metal bands at the time. And then you have Springsteen doing his take on it with just, you know, jeans and a white t-shirt. And I kind of like that, you know, that the dichotomy between, you know, the fashion of the 80s and what he brought to the pop fashion world.
Yeah, it's just fucking weird. It's all weird. I don't know.
I used to dress like that when I was a kid. I was like, ah, I need a bunch of white t-shirts. And I was a jeans and a white t-shirt guy, you know, in grade three because of Bruce Springsteen.
And then of course, the only, like Lee already mentioned, he only had one more album after that in the 80s. And again, of course, not as stripped down as Nebraska, but pretty stripped down, pretty bleak record. Definitely not what the record company was probably hoping he would follow up Born in the USA with, just the same way they were. I'm sure they wanted a different follow-up to The River, but...
Yeah.
But when you reach that level of success,
yeah,
you can't do the same album. It'll never... Yeah, it's too successful. You have to change gears, or else it just sounds repetitive, and then it flops, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't really win after that much success. Okay, who's ever had that huge a record and followed up with another record that huge? Like, you look at Alanis Morissette, who had... You know, an absurdly huge record. It was too big to follow up and be that successful again. Even Michael Jackson didn't do it, you know?
But I don't know what you guys think, but I think the production of Born in the USA is pretty awkward and pretty dated. And I don't know, not some of the choices were not the best choices.
And I don't mind it. I mean, like, it's dated, but it sounds nostalgic to me. It reminds me of what music sounded like in 1984 and... You know, that's why I like a lot of 80s music because of that. And the production does sound dated and some of the instrumentation and stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of that stuff is kind of the appeal to me now, hindsight, looking back on that music. Like the keyboards on Born in the USA and Dancing in the Dark used to annoy me, but now I kind of dig it. You know, I can listen to them with different ears now that I'm a bit older.
Yeah, I'm not one to really care about 80s production at all. You know, I love most of like the hits from the 80s and everything, but I think with those songs on Born in the USA, some of it's pretty weird. Like, I don't think it works on it to a certain degree.
It'd be funny to hear what that record would have sounded like if it had like just raw, you know, rock production.
And yeah.
If the drums sounded more dry, if there was less keyboards, like, would those songs still be as good? You know, would that record still be as big as it was? Mm-hmm. Or was it the time and the perfect sounds for 1984-85, you know?
All right, let's pick a song.
Yeah, let's start counting down our songs. So who wants to start with their number five?
Lee.
How are we gonna do this, too, if we...
Yeah, who wants to end? I guess a better question is, who should end?
We double up on our picks, too, right?
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, that might happen. Yeah,
it happens, yeah.
But if you guys pick one, should I say, oh, that's my number two or something like that? Or should I just wait until my number two?
Just wait.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So BJ, do you want Lee to go first, or do you want Lee to go last?
What do you want to do, Lee? Who do you want to go? I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe I'll go first, because you guys probably have more songs that you don't like than I do.
Okay, so you go first, and then BJ, you go last. So I'll go after.
Okay, I don't know if my number one is Lee. That much of a like stellar closer, but.
So in order, we had to pick our five worst Bruce Springsteen songs from the 80s. So we're looking at those four studio albums and, you know, B-sides and stuff like that. So my number five pick is Cautious Man off of Tunnel of Love.
Bill Orton was a cautious man of the road. He walked looking over his shoulder and remained faithful to his code. When something caught his eye, he'd measure his need, and then very carefully he'd proceed.
Yeah, I like this song. It's got great lyrics, but it never really hit me. I never really thought it really fit or stood out on that record. You know, it's basically a simple song. It's just acoustic and synthed. It's kind of a Nebraska-esque song, and it kind of sticks out amongst the other kind of Tunnel of Love tunes on that record a little bit, you know. But I got to say, though, as I was analyzing this song to get ready for this episode, the more I analyzed it, I started liking it. So I had to kind of, like, stop getting into it and just go with my initial feeling of, it doesn't really jump out to me on that record. But because as I got into the lyrics, I'm like, oh, this is kind of a cool song about a guy he's got tattoos on his hands that say love and fear, and he's trying to choose between his regular life and his marriage life. And I was kind of getting into that. But just on the surface, I didn't really like this song, and it doesn't really stand out for me on that Tunnel of Love album.
I don't mind that one. It doesn't stand out, I guess, but it's definitely not one of my least favorites.
Yeah, and even though I'm picking it as my my number five worst song, I still probably like it, you know, a lot more than, you know, a lot of other Bruce songs. So
yeah, like, I mean, at least it's not rockabilly.
Now Billy was an honest man. He wanted to do what was right. He worked hard to fill their lives with happy days and loving nights. Alone on his knees in the darkness, for steadiness he'd pray. For he knew in a restless heart the seed of betrayal.
Okay, mine's next. Okay.
Okay.
So, the Nebraska album is an album that I listen to more and more as time goes by. And as time goes by, there's one song that I like less and less. So as I like the album more, I like this song less. This one will probably piss off BJ, but I'm going to go with My Father's House off Nebraska.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That hurts.
Damn.
The more I listen to this album, the more that song falls. I know lyrically it's got something going on, but I still find it dull musically. So I don't care how great the lyrics are. A boring song is a boring song. And that song, is, as time goes on, bores me more and more.
I heard the wind rustling through. And ghostly voices rose from the fields. I ran with my heart pounding down that broken path. With the devil snapping at my heels.
Well, I think it in a major way, I don't even think of Nebraska as individual songs. So that's just a part of Nebraska. But, you know, there wasn't anything from Nebraska, spoiler alert, that was even in consideration for my list. So
the lyrics on that song, I think, is why you can't pick it as one of the worst songs. I think it's a great song, and it's one of those songs that he really used to, you know, represent the relationship he had with his father, so...
Setting aside the lyrics, I still like, if it's just on, I find it boring.
I ran till I fell, shaking in his arms.
All right, my number five. Let's see, I've written a series of clever quips. This one is from The River, and when I just think about the other songs he could have put on The River instead of this one, it's a song called Ramrod, which I wrote, this is the song you go to the bathroom during at the John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band concert. And he calls her Little Dolly and Sugar, and we get car metaphors. Yeah. It's almost like if you know how Weird Al does those songs, which are he parodies a style but not a specific song. So this is like the Weird Al Bruce Springsteen style parody.
You're nuts.
Come on, come on, Little Dolly. Come on, Sugar. That, you know, that's the chorus, right?
I think rock and roll lyrics, man. This is about a guy on a Saturday night that's got a girl. And he's got a hot rod, and they're gonna party and they're having a good time, and they're gonna dance, and they're gonna go ramrod, and there's sexual metaphors and.
I knew I was going to get to Lee with this one. Well, here, let me read what I wrote. Let me read this cleverly crafted shit. Okay. This song seems like it was written post-head injury. Like he came out of a fever dream coma just singing this nonsense along to the beat of the heart monitor. And then I wrote, it's like a distillation of every bad impulse Springsteen has in the studio to just hammer out some cookie-cutter heartland rock. And then he puts it on the record instead of Roulette. So that's, I don't know.
blasphemy, man. This is, I think it's more
blasphemy.
Groove on this song, man. That is, this song is gold just for that Clemens sax solo on this, which Bruce wrote the song specifically so Clarence could play that sax solo.
I think, I don't know. I don't know if wrote is the correct word.
You obviously haven't seen this live, man. This song tears the roof off the fucking place when he plays this live. Come on.
I was in the bathroom.
This is everything I hoped for and more, guys.
Bruce Springsteen playing his guitar on his mic stand, doing those slides and shit, and he's, oh, kidding me?
Oh, my God. So do they do it like a longer version?
Oh, yeah. Like, you usually get about 12, 15 minutes of ramrod.
No.
Oh, yeah.
You're kidding.
Plenty of time to go take a leak and get a beer and then go back to your seat.
You got the shtick with Steve, man. You gotta love that. The Three Stooges stuff, that all happens in this song, man. You gotta love that. So back to me. So, yeah, slim pickings here. So I'm picking the B-side for Brilliant Disguise for my number four worst Bruce song of the 80s, which is Lucky Man. Yeah, there's not much to this song. It seems unfinished. It's like there's one chord, one groove, kind of one verse melody through this whole thing. It's barely two chords. I think he hits a four or five chord somewhere there in the progression. Yeah, the lyrics are like nonsensical to me. Like it's although he does get bonus points for mentioning Calgary in the lyrics, which I thought was pretty cool. But they're kind of throwaway lyrics. I don't really get what he's talking about in this. It's kind of like that one chord. I would have preferred maybe like a raw or bluesier one chord Howlin' Wolf kind of arrangement on this, but when you put the kind of 80s Tunnel of Love production with it and it's got a really shitty bad guitar tone, yeah, Lucky Man is not much for me. I could do without this song for sure.
Definitely contender for my list, and definitely a song that you know why it's a B-side. There's no confusion as to why that one's a B-side.
Sounds like an idea he started and he never really finished it, and you just like, just throw it on as a B-side or something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't do any B-sides on my list, but definitely, if I did, that would be on the list for sure.
Yeah, I had to, man. I couldn't come up with five. If I didn't
Okay, I guess I'm up. Yep. Okay, my number four will probably make Lee reasonably happy and relieved because I chose Cautious Man.
Ah.
So
you're on the same page a little bit there.
So Tunnel of Love is one of my absolute favorite Springsteen albums. I didn't get it really when it came out. I think it was a little too mature because I was, you know,
immature.
I was like 14 or when it came out, so that was just well beyond me. But as I grew up, my appreciation for that album is really, you know, really grown. Now when I put this record on, I always put it on side two first,
right?
It just feels better. I've mentioned this before on this show. It feels better to me as an opening side of an album, side two. So for me, when I put this record on, Cautious Man is buried near the end because it's the second last song on side one. And it's just kind of like that's where it belongs for me. It's like buried at the end. You know, again, I'm not a lyrics guy. So setting that aside, I just find there's no hooks in this song and I'm bored. And I wish it wasn't on the album, frankly. I think it'd be a better album if that song was gone.
Yeah, that song is driven by the lyrics. Huh? That's mainly a lyrics song.
It's a lyrics song.
I recognize that. And that's what I'm like. But still, if I'm just going to put it on and listen to it, it's boring.
Yeah. Yep. I don't mind it, and probably just as more in the context, like I was saying about My Father's House, probably the same thing with that. Like, Tunnel of Love is a pretty cohesive album, too, except my next pick.
You almost need that song in there just for the lyrics, because the album is about, you know, you know, hoping for love and your loss of love, and that's kind of just, you know, another piece of that story that he's trying to tell. So that's probably why it was included. But
the perfect album to write when you just got married.
Yeah. 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 I think my next pick is probably going to offend everyone. I'm kind of picking up on that. It's from the same album, Tunnel of Love, and it's called Spare Parts. And I think of this as swamp rock, which is a phrase that should not exist, in my opinion. I don't like the guitar tone. You know, it's like that Alana Miles song, or I don't know. It's in that. It turns me off. I don't like this kind of song. I don't know if it's bluesy, I guess. But you know what I mean by swamp rock? Yeah. Isn't that what it is? Like that kind of vibe? I don't like it.
I wouldn't say it's CCR rock.
Yeah. I think this song is huge foreshadowing of Human Touch. Like, it's,
I agree.
All the bad elements of Human Touch are in Spare Parts, I think.
I definitely think that this song, he ran with a little bit of this song on the next albums.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, but I do agree. You hear some of the next albums in this song.
Yeah. I've just never liked it at all. And what is it? Is it third song?
Song four.
Song four?
Yeah.
I do think it's pretty cool that he's got a song that starts off with a lyric about a guy that should have pulled out, but he didn't, you know.
I guess Janie did lose heart after all, because this song, you know, he told Janie not to lose heart, and then look what happens to her in this fucking song, so.
Bobby stayed in, but he should have pulled out, man.
Yeah, Bobby. Yeah. Bobby's gonna make another appearance on my list.
This song, to me, it's middle of the road. Like, I like it, I don't love it, but I would never have put this on my list. What about you, Lee? Where is this song a hold up for you?
I don't mind it. I can see how you would put that on the list. Like, it's, but on the Tunnel of Love record, it's kind of one of the only kind of like hard rocking songs, if you can call it a hard rocking song. So I like it for that reason, but yeah, it's all right. It's not a big one, though.
All right, Lee, you're up, buddy.
I'm up. Okay, so my number three, continuing with my Tunnel of Love picks, I'm picking All That Heaven Will Allow as my number three worst Springsteen song. And like I'm going to say with a lot of these songs, the lyrics are good on this, but I don't like the delivery on this. I don't like the production. I think this song, this version, sounds way too adult contemporary for me. It sounds like something I'd hear in a dentist office or in like a Muzak in an elevator or something like that. It sounds too nice. It's too square for Springsteen for me. You know, the production is just, it's too clean. It's too pretty. The drums are lame on it. It's just like Max is just playing a very, very soft cross stick and stuff like that. It's too soft. The keyboards are cheesy. I will say I like the Mavericks version. The Mavericks did a country, like sort of a new country rock version of this in 94. And I think they did a fucking great version of this. Raul Malo sings it really well, sings it better than Bruce. The drums on the Mavericks version are great. Like, they're slamming kind of a surf beat on this, and it really, you know, picks the song up. But yeah, the Springsteen version is just too adult contemporary, too Michael Bolton for me or whatever, you know.
That's interesting you say that. Like, I think the song has got a bit too much. The chorus has got a decent hook, and that's saved it for me. I'd love to hear this as a proper E Street song, though.
Yeah. It's corny, but a corny pop song is always going to bother me a lot less than a blues song. It's just, I can deal with if it's at least melodic, then it's probably not going to make my list. when there's blues and rockabilly stuff to compete with it. So,
you're nuts.
But yeah, that is definitely not one of his best moments. And I was thinking as you were talking about it, that's another one that could have been on Human Touch. You know,
yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I'm amused by this next one. My number three, I'm just going to read out what I wrote because I really kind of did a bit of a brain dump as I wrote it. Number three is Ramrod. And I just barfed out this paragraph here. He still plays this piece of shit live.
Of course he does.
Yeah, Lee went into a 10-minute speech about it live.
Of course he does, man.
Ugh, the worst. Rolling Stone has this as number 91 in the top 100 Bruce songs.
What?
Well, Rolling Stone knows fuck all.
Then I put, clearly Rolling Stone are a bunch of idiots.
Well, that's not news. Come on.
What I don't understand is it was never released as a single, but it still made it to number 30 in the charts. Like, what the fuck, people?
You guys are nuts. This is a great song, man. I have to play it again. Like, his guitar playing on this alone is reason for him playing this song every night.
I dislike this song so much that it would be on my list if he even did his full career. I would probably have Ramrod on my list.
Well, you guys have never actually been drag racing or fixed up a car or anything, have you?
No. I've never been drag racing.
I can change the oil on a car, and I can change, I don't know, I've changed all kinds of stuff on cars.
Have you ever been ramrod in the back seat of a car?
With the little honey, the little sugar? Come, is that what he means when he says, come on?
I think so, yeah. You guys are nuts. Everybody out there is listening is going, these guys are wrong. We all love ramrod.
Somebody's losing credibility here, but I don't think it's us, buddy.
All right. How can you not like good time rock and roll? It's right in the pocket. It's not too fast, not too slow. He's playing in the key of F. He's playing. Oh, it's just it's an original key for. Oh, it's great. I love it.
All right, BG, you're up, buddy. Let's move on from Ramrod before.
I'm gonna. Mind. I probably need to apologize to Lee in advance for this next pick. It's the B-side of Glory Days. It's called Stand On It. It's just a generic nightmare. The deep-voiced Bruce with the echo effect. God, the fucking echo and the Bobby's in this song again. He didn't pull out in the last song. And now in this song, you were talking about drag race, and he's crashing a car into a fucking wall or something at the end. And, all right, let's see. What did I write here? I was talking about the Born in the USA era production. I mean, the production on this song is fucking ludicrous. You know, I wouldn't like it if it was more like a raw, rough version, but fucking producing it like Born in the USA, the worst production on Born in the USA, and then it's this kind of a just simplistic, whatever kind of song it is. It sounds like the Fabulous Thunderbirds being covered by Pat Boone, which that might be an exaggeration.
Ouch.
And I said,
you're not like the rapid fire Jerry Lee Lewis esque vocals he does on this.
I said it's the B side of the Glory Days 7-inch, so I want to take the record and stand on it so you can't ever play it. It's even worse than Pink Cadillac, so that's how bad it is. So it's pretty. This is unlistenable to. I mean, it's just to me, it's laughably bad. But you know,
you're way out of line.
You're the one who included the B sides.
You've got never seen this played live with the Swedish cowboy Nils Lofgren.
Thankfully, I have not seen it played live.
So I'm up next now.
Are we at number two already?
Yeah. Number two.
Okay.
Number two. All right. So my number two, I went a little maybe against the rules on this, but the song I picked was a single in the '80s.
Oh.
So I think it's allowable. So I'm picking the live version of "Fire" off the live '75 to '85 box set, which they released as a single. Now the performance is from 1978, but the song was a hit in '85. And I've never liked this song. I never liked the Bruce version. Obviously, people know this song was written for Elvis after Bruce saw him live. He tried to get the song to Elvis, but Elvis had passed away before it was able to get in his hands. Now, I think if Elvis had recorded it, it might have been, you know, a big hit for the King, and it might have even like saved his life and given him another shot in his career. And I just the same way I always envision what the Ramones would have done with "Hungry Heart." I always imagine what Elvis would have done with this song, and I think it would have been a great hit. The Robert Gordon version is pretty good. The Pointer Sisters version I like a lot. That reminds me, you know, grocery shopping with my mom in the late 70s, early 80s, and stuff like that. But the Bruce version I never liked. I always thought it was kind of a girl song, something like soccer moms love, you know. Like it's a pop song, and I admit it's catchy as fuck and stuff like that. But just that bass part and the soft vocal in the verse, it's just kind of annoying, you know, like... Oh, and I guess the thing that ruined this song for me was in the 90s, I played drums with a female country singer, and she would always do this song, so just her awful version of this, you know, just made this, this song's a thorn in my side, you know, and there's that middle part that he tries to rock it up, you know, a little bit, you gotta hold on me right from the start, and it's just, it sounds like Linda Ronstadt rock and roll, you know, I don't know. The drums, again, too subdued. You got that lame cross stick on the drums. And, you know, there's no guitar on this. Like, it's all piano. There's not even a sax solo. So, yeah, I don't like "Fire." And, yeah, furthermore, that Robin Williams Elmer Fudd skit, I never liked that.
You know, I'm going to go on record here saying that I never predicted when we started doing this episode that Lee would passionately hate a Bruce Springsteen song, like I just heard right there. That was amazing. That was amazing.
I don't like "Fire," man. I don't like "Fire." I know it's a hit, but
hey, there's one he likes less too. So
I know, right? Wow.
I don't.
Number two.
I don't necessarily like "Fire," but I think it's good songwriting. I think that's one that he was really wise to give away. Like some of the songs he wanted to give away or gave away, he was nuts. But that one makes perfect sense that he. Yeah.
And I like the Pointer Sisters version. I think they have a great version of that, you know.
That song is just way too catchy for me to put on my list. But I hear what you're saying, and I agree that it was a wise move to hand it off and let somebody else have a hit and just cash the checks.
Yeah, as soon as I hear that bass, doo, 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 I just be like, ugh.
And I also think that it is...
Next jam, we're going to do
Yeah, next year. It's very possible that would have been a hit for Elvis, I think. Very possible.
I agree. Absolutely.
I agree. That his like you hear the Robert Gordon version, and you kind of can hear like, oh, the kind of style that he was going for and what Elvis might have done with that. But, you know, I think with the voice of the King on that, it might have been a big hit.
I'm driving in my car. Turn on the radio. I'm pulling you close, but you just say no. You say you don't like it, but girl, I know you're a liar. 'Cause when we kiss, fire. Well, late at night, I chase you home. I say I wanna stay. You say you wanna be alone. You say you don't need me. But but you can't hide your desire. Cause when we kiss, fire. You had a hold on me right from the start. It felt so good I couldn't tear it apart. Got my nerves all jumping, acting like a fool. Cause your kisses, they burn, but your heart stays cool. Romeo and Juliet, Samson and Delilah. Baby, you can bet the love they didn't deny. Well, now your words, they split, but your words, they lie. Cause when we kiss, fire. Oh, fire.
Okay, so
Brian right, Sword, my, number two. My number two is Hungry Heart.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I've picked on this song before, and I'm truly happy that Bruce finally had a number one hit. But I hate this song, and I hate the fact that they sped up the tape to raise the pitch of his voice. It doesn't even sound like him on the record.
Yeah.
I think it's a pedestrian song, and it's an automatic skip for me whenever it comes on. I just hate the song.
I like that song. I agree that speeding up the tape was unnecessary and kind of weird.
Yep. And his vocals sound weird because of it.
I love this song. I can't get away from that great Max Motown drum fill to kick it off. And
Got a Wife and Kids in Baltimore, Jack. That's great. What a great opening line. I love it.
And the fact that it's such a happy song about a guy that's like decided to leave family, you know. And
yeah, that's hilarious.
I will say the live version is tired. Because the live version goes on too long, and he does crowd surfing, and it's a lot of audience participation, which gets boring for me. But you know, I can't deny that studio track is a classic pop song.
We'll be right back.
Okay, so my number two, to me, this is an obvious one. In fact, it might be coming up on other lists. I don't know, but Working on the Highway. It's just a truly embarrassing, like, is this a Wiggles song? It's like children's music. And the Born in the USA production just makes it seem that much more ridiculous. And also, you know, this song, the lyrics of this song started out as Child Bride, which was a really slow, boring acoustic song, like Nebraska-style song. So I just picture Bruce opening his notebook. He's got these lyrics. They just hammer this fucking song out in the studio. Like, who knows if he even wrote it this way? Like, they just played this shit, and he sang it, and then there you go. And then it ends up on the album. One of the biggest albums of all time, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, oh my God, to me, it's really embarrassingly bad. And and by the end of the song, he's in prison for kidnapping an underage girl, I think, which is the child bride, I guess, of the original title.
Friday night's pay night, guys fresh out of work. Talking about the weekend, trying to scrub off the dirt. Some heading on to their families, some wearing trouble on their shirts, some driving down to Stouffville, just looking to get hurt.
Some heading home to the family, some are looking to get hurt. Some going down to Stouffville wearing trouble on their shirts.
I work for the county out on 95, just holding that red flag, watching the traffic pass me by.
I work for the county out on 95. I'll read a whole red flag and watch the traffic pass me by.
All day I keep a picture of my baby in my head. At night I dream of weather, laying in my bunkhouse bed.
Picture of a pretty little miss. Someday, Mr. Rum, gonna lead a better life than this. Working on the highway late and down the blacktop. Getting on the highway all day long, I don't stop. Getting on the highway blasting through the bedrock. Getting on the highway working on the highway.
So I was wondering if this was Bobby again. Is this Bobby? The guy that didn't pull out and then he crashed the car and stand on it, right?
Yeah.
And now he's kidnapping a fucking underage girl and he's on the chain gang at the end, so Bobby gets around. This is a first person song, so I'm just guessing Bobby is singing this song from his point of view.
That girl's brothers and her family that, like, I don't think gave him a chance, so I think he was wrongfully imprisoned on this song.
Bride was the original title. And I don't really know what else he's being arrested for. I mean, if the girl just goes with him on a cross-country trip, you don't get arrested for that unless there's some other crime involved.
Unless you're Chuck Berry, that happens.
yeah, that's the man act. I don't know how this song ends up on the record. That's just what's baffling to me, is how is this on the album? I don't know, but...
I love this song. I would probably put this in my top 10 Bruce Springsteen songs.
No, that's not even possible. Come on, you're just joking around.
This is the song that stood out for me. Like,
it does stand out, but not for any good reasons.
This is the Bruce rockabilly song on that album, and I love rockabilly Bruce. And like, I think it's a great song. I love the train beat. I love that there's some rockabilly. I love the guitar tone. I love the keyboard part, you know, man. I love the acoustic guitar on this.
I would have to think even a rockabilly fan would think this song is a joke, but I guess not.
Okay.
All right, Lee. You're up.
All right, so my number one.
Oh, boy. Number one, yeah.
Most favorite Bruce Springsteen song of the 80s, I can legitimately say, is the song Fade Away from the River. I don't like this song. Bruce gets inspired by people, and you'll hear some of those influences in his writing. Like we said, he was influenced by the Ramones, and he wrote Hungry Heart. He was influenced by Elvis, and he wrote Fire. But here, he's influenced by Elvis Costello, and I don't like Elvis Costello. I don't like his first name. I don't like the way he sings. You know, I don't like his glasses. And this song is Bruce whining about some girl dumping him. You know, I don't like desperate Bruce. He's not my kind of Bruce. You know, once again, you got lame.
You like drummer. Child Bride Bruce.
I like Child Bride Bruce. Yeah. Once again, you got lame drums on this. Like Max just like playing a cross stick. Way too much piano. Like barely any guitar on this song. You know, I like the organ solo on this. Danny gets a pretty good organ solo on this. But again, the drums behind it are too soft. You know, I would have liked a little pickup there on the drums. And this was a single. I have no idea why it made the album, let alone it was a single.
Wow. Like,
the B-side of this was Be True, which I think is an amazing song. That should have been the A-side. That should have been on the record. This should have been the throwaway B-side. I don't like Fade Away. This is known as one of Steven Van Zandt's favorite Bruce Springsteen songs. I don't get it. Not a fan of this song.
I'm really surprised. Yeah.
Well, I always thought it was baffling that that was the second single, too, and I fully agree that Be True is like a billion times better of a song, but, Fade Away at least is like a melodic song that's not, doesn't make me nauseous, so it's never going to make my list, but it's definitely not one of his finest moments, I would agree with that. It's probably one of the worst songs on the river, yeah.
Yeah, I just never liked it, but like I got to say before this, like, you know, it's still better than, you know, a lot of those other songs. Like, if we'd be able to pick worse than the 90s, worse than the 2000s, you know, Fade Away would never have been considered, but...
But I love Elvis Costello, so I don't know what's
up with that. I just never got into his whiny voice, and I don't know.
not enough songs about pussy and cars, right?
Exactly. Yeah, he doesn't rock, man. He doesn't rock to have that name Elvis, as far as I'm concerned.
Declan.
Yeah, Declan suits him better, yeah.
Declan. Oh, boy, I'm anxious to hear what Brian's number one is.
My number one worst Bruce Springsteen song of the 80s is Working on the Highway. Working on the highway, and down the blacktop, getting on the highway.
Yeah, I kind of saw that coming.
Yeah. My notes were, let's see, fuck this song. Here's the thing about this song.
Harsh,
now,
man.
Now, if, here's the thing. For me, if they would have removed this song and put in Murder Incorporated, they would have had the perfect Bruce record for the 80s. You know, there's not such a thing as a perfect album for Bruce because he's got a few, but this... That was the one change for me that they needed to make to this album, and they would have nailed it. Turf, Working on the Highway, put on Murder Incorporated, and done. It's a weak song. Shouldn't have been there. I don't like it at all. In fact, it makes me rather angry how much I dislike it.
And do you think it's just Bruce reading the notebook and the band just playing like a standard jam, and then that's the song? That's kind of what I think it is.
Yeah, I don't think
it's standard, man. It's not a standard jam, and you got like a lot of intricacies going on there.
He already used these lyrics. These are lyrics that were a completely different song, you know, which I think, you know, lends credence to my theory that this was just a flip open the notebook. Let's play this shit.
I don't know about that, but I think that this song, I think he added it to the record because it's different.
Yeah,
you want to have a, you know, one, you know, cover one more thing and add the song. But I think he sacrificed a far superior song to do so. But he already had some rockin' stuff on the album, so he could get rid of Murder Incorporated. But Murder Incorporated is a fucking killer song.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's one of those, one of many Bruce songs that it's kind of baffling that he didn't put on his records. But yeah.
Exactly.
I stand by it. I love Working on the Highway. I love playing drums to it. I love playing guitar to it. I love singing it. It's a fun song. It's good live. When he played in 2012, and you know, I was down in the pit, great show, and you know, talking to all the Bruce fans, we were saying, what song do you want to hear live, what song do you want me to open with, and we all had our bets, right? And you know, my bet was Working on the Highway, one of my favorite songs that I'd never seen live. And you know, he came out that night and he opened the show with it.
Oh wow.
he walked down to his little small stage there with his acoustic guitar and, you know, rocked out working on the highway for me and McCormick that night.
What are the odds? They must have had a listening device down there in the crowd or something.
All right.
All right, BJ.
Oh, we're at my number one?
You're okay. Number one.
I don't even know if this is a song, honestly. But whatever you want to call it, it's bad. It's the first song on Tunnel of Love. Well, song. I use the word loosely. Ain't Got You. I've always fucking hated it so much.
I got the fortunes of heaven and diamonds and gold. I got all the bonds, baby, that the bank could hold. Well, I got houses across the country, honey, end to end. And everybody but it wants to be my friend. Well, I got all the riches, baby, any man ever knew. But the only thing I ain't got, honey, I ain't got you. I got a house full of Rembrandt and priceless art and all the little girls that want to tear me apart. When I walk down the street, people stop and stare. Well, you think I might be thrilled, but baby, I don't care, cause I got more good luck, honey, than old King Baruch. But the only thing I ain't got, baby, I ain't got you. I got a big diamond watch sitting on my wrist. I try to tempt you, baby, but you just resist. I made a deal with the devil, babe, I won't deny. Until I got you in my arms, I can't be satisfied. I got a pound of caviar sitting home on ice. I got a fancy foreign car that rides like paradise. I got 100 pretty women knocking down my door, and folks want to kiss me. I ain't seen before. I've been around the world and all across the seven seas. Been paid a king's ransom for doing what comes naturally. But I'm still the biggest fool money this world ever knew. Cause the only thing I ain't got, baby, I ain't got you.
It's what the fuck is it? Is I you know I said it's an improvised chant. I don't really. It's an improvised chant about being extremely wealthy but married to Julianne Phillips instead of Patti Scialfa. I don't know what the fuck the song is, but opening the record with it was insane to me. But luckily, the rest of the album was better. Well, not according to you guys, but it's only 2 minutes long. Is this just like a? It's almost just like an intro, right? Yeah, exactly. And a song?
Yeah.
That's how I kind of look at it, as he's starting this album with like a, just a basic, you know, like a blues premise, I Ain't Got You song, which has been written many times before, and this is just his take on that I Ain't Got You vibe, and he's playing it all kind of acoustically. And I love the juxtaposition between this song and how it goes right into Tougher Than the Rest with that kind of keyboard part, and it's really kind of unsettling how this... You know,
it is unsettling.
Yeah, and it kind of sets the theme for the album too. I was just thinking about loss of love, right?
I also think you want to start the record and show that this is not Born in the USA.
Yeah.
Off the top, it's just like you're in for something different. You know, it made it very clear from second one.
I guess I can see that. I just hate it. I think it's horrible. I would never listen to it. And I love Tougher Than the Rest. And it's like, why is this in the way? You know, but I actually like the Tougher Than the Rest from the Chimes of Freedom more. Anyways.
Yeah, I like that one better. It's slower too. That's the one case where the live version is slower than the studio version.
But yeah, Ain't Got You was just going to be my number one from the start. So, but I guess it's not the greatest closer. It's not the greatest climactic pick.
Dun, dun, dun.
I was going to make a joke and ask Lee what his favorite Bruce song from the 80s was, and then he'd say that was my number one. But so my list wasn't all rockabilly. I had to when I was listening to The River, I had to admit that even though I'm not a huge fan of like Crush on You and You Can Look But You Better Not Touch and stuff, they weren't going to make my list of the worst.
You know, I can see how you guys don't like working on the highway, but Ramrod is just that's just unacceptable. That's unacceptable for rock.
Till I
I love how I had three picks that you guys also chose. Maybe not both, but you know, I had some overlap, and then two where you guys both thought I was a complete idiot for choosing. So that was good.
There was no song that all three of us picked, right?
No.
That's cool.
No, like my overlap, I'd Work on the Highway, Ramrod, and Cautious Man.
Yeah.
Did you two agree on any songs? No, I don't think so.
Lee, I totally love that you love like the classic rock and roll and like R&B and stuff. I just my favorite stuff is just more melodic than that. Like not simple, I guess. You know, but all those words are objective, right?
So. Yeah. And see, the thing I like about that, like I know how people say, oh, it's just the same three blues chords over and over again, or it's just like a simple rock and roll beat rhythm. But what I like about that is that's the fact, that's why I love it. It's because here's our take on these simple chords and this rock and roll, and this is where we're going to play, and we're going to show how we play this style of music, right? And it's not easy to play rock and roll and blues, and that's where you kind of show off your musicianship playing these songs. So I get right into that, and when the band plays Ramrod live in concert, it's a show for what, you know, great musicians they are, playing those simple two chords and just making them feel so good for 10 minutes.
7 minutes too long.
Cool. Well, like Working on the Highway is number two and number one on two of these lists, so that's probably the biggest offender here out of all. But I was kind of expecting that.
Yeah, that was no big surprise.
No. No, yeah.
I almost put Hungry Heart as my number one just because I knew it'd piss you off a bit more. But, yeah.
BJ.
Okay.
See you later, Brian.
All right, see you, man.
Okay, later, guys.
I'll be back.